Morning, everybody, and happy 4th of July. My name is Pat, and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is August 5 of 2002. My home group is the Saturday 7 Men's Stag group that meets in Napa, California. And some of you may be aware that where I live, the Napa Valley region in Northern California, has a certain reputation. And I'm here to confirm for you that that reputation is true. There are, in fact, some of the finest AA meetings available anywhere located in the Napa Valley. So if you're in Northern California and that far, please come and check us out. I've been doing corrections correspondent service for 10 years. And I'm very excited to be here, because I have so much to tell you about myself. I want to thank the convention committee in general, and specifically Clement, for inviting me to be here to talk about Corrections Correspondence Service, which is referred to as a very rewarding but rarely mentioned form of AA service. And going back about 10 years, I can't remember exactly where I heard the corrections correspondence message, and I can't really remember from whom I heard the corrections correspondence message, but I do remember the message. And I remember it because it hit me pretty hard. And I do remember that the speaker asked the audience to imagine where you would be today if you had no AA fellowship. Where would you be if you had no other alcoholics with whom to share recovery experience, strength, and hope? Where would you be without a sponsor today? And now think back. Think back to where you first came to AA, when you were very much alone, and that you were looking for a solution. Where would you be then with no sponsor, no meetings, no fellowship, no people? And I remembered back so clearly how many people helped me along the way in my early sobriety. They still do today, and particularly having a sponsor. You know, where would I have been? And so now, imagine yourself at that magical turning point where you've developed a desire not to drink. And you're looking for a solution and you want to put your hand out, but there is nobody there. You know, imagine trying to change yourself when the only person you have to turn to is yourself. You know, this scenario adequately describes many inmates that find themselves in prison, and they have concluded that alcohol helped get them there. They're looking for a solution, but they have nobody to turn to. In many cases, no meetings. In many cases, no literature. And in the cases where there might be a meeting in the institution, there may be a long waiting list for an inmate to get cleared for that meeting. Or, as Clement mentioned, for other reasons, they may not be able to get to a meeting. But they are finding themselves in the dark. And some of them write to Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're reaching out their hand for help. Perhaps the way a drowning man is putting out his hand for a life preserver. They write to ask if there is anybody with whom they can correspond to share recovery, experience, strength, and hope. And they write the GSO for this purpose the way we might put out our hand for help by going to a meeting. Because in general, for us, that's simple. So the speaker, going back 10 years ago, was describing this scenario. And I recalled so clearly the very premise on which our recovery and our program of recovery is based. One alcoholic sharing with another. And the speaker asked the audience, is there anybody in the audience willing to extend their hand to a suffering inmate who's reaching out for help? Would you be willing to write a letter to someone who's trying to recover alone and is in a desperate situation in need of help? Are you available to write a letter to someone reaching out for help? So said it another way, was I willing to share the gift that was given to me so freely with someone who has put pen to paper, written our office, and asked for help? I was told that the only requirement for being a corrections correspondent was the willingness to write a letter. There was no requirement that I had to have been incarcerated myself. I just had to be willing to write. That is it. So, in pondering those questions, am I available? Yes. Am I willing? Yes. And I signed up on the spot. So that was some time ago. And here's how it worked. I took one of these applications, and I filled it out. I chose to use my home group's P.O. box as the return address, you know, with my home group's permission. Other correspondents may choose to use their home address or use the P.O. box for their district office or local central office with their permission. And I filled that out, and I sent it off in the mail. And I got the information back from the General Service Office telling me who my inmate was and his contact information. I also received a pamphlet from the GSO with some tips on writing, and it was called Before You Sit Down to Write. So I wrote my first letter. And that was some time ago. And I've had many corrections correspondents since that time. Clearly, too many scenarios to talk about individually. Collectively, however, I can tell you that, as described, corrections correspondence is a very, very rewarding form of 12-step service. Number one, helping those in the dark begin to see the light, very rewarding. Having an inmate write back to you and say, everyone in my family, practically everyone I know, has kicked me to the curb and will have nothing to do with me. You don't even know me. And you're willing to write. You're willing to help. You know, that's the hand of AA. Having an inmate write to say that receiving your letter is the highlight of my week or even my month. Sometimes they write to say, you're the only mail I get, period. It's very rewarding. I had an inmate send me the only photograph of his family he had to explain to me who he had harmed and to whom he owed amends, and asked me if I could to please return it to him. You know, those of us that know the truth can gain the confidence of another alcoholic in only a matter of moments. You know, I've had inmates write me to tell me how they are now helping others in their prison, how they're sponsoring others, how they're obtaining literature and help, you know, carrying the message. So we call that watching the fellowship grow up around you, and that too is very, very rewarding. And we have a General Service Office publication that's called Sharing from Behind the Walls. And that publication is full of gratitude stories from inmates, you know, saying how thankful they are that there are enough of us on the outside, or at least that there's a quantity of us on the outside that are willing to correspond with them. Corrections correspondence is now a permanent part of my program of recovery. It has been for quite some time, and here's why. Number one, I never, ever fail to feel gratitude for my sobriety when I sit down and write a letter. I never fail to remember what I used to be like, and thank God what I'm like now when I sit down and write a letter to an inmate. I always remember that in order to keep it, I need to give it away. I also get to remember my own suggestions when I write. Perhaps you know the story. The story goes something like this. Please take my advice. I'm not using it. Yeah. And so when I'm writing to an inmate about one of our steps, I get to think about how I'm using that step in my life today or not. And, you know, when I sit down to write an inmate, I'm stepping out of myself, and whatever problem is going on with me at the time is greatly diminished when I consider the circumstances of the person to whom I am writing. So, indeed, I have found corrections correspondence to be very rewarding. And as I said earlier, you know, this service is regarded as being very rewarding, but a rarely mentioned form of AA service. Corrections correspondence was started in 1971, so it's 44 years old now. And at least in my local fellowship, many fellowship members have never heard of the corrections correspondence service. And I've made presentations to folks that have done corrections work for over 20 years, and they've never heard of the corrections correspondence service. So here's a real opportunity, because there will always be a need for more outside AA members to correspond with the inmates that have requested this service, particularly with males. There are always, or at most times, there are more male inmates requesting this service than there are outside male correspondents to fulfill their requests. And when an inmate sends in a plea for help, sometimes there can be a months-long waiting list to be aligned with an outside correspondent. So can you imagine waiting months in order to get some help when you're suffering by yourself? The corrections desk at the General Service Office receives about 600 letters a month, and of those 600 letters, 200 a month pertain to the Corrections Correspondent Service. And these are letters from suffering inmates who want to share their recovery through the mail with an outside correspondent. Currently, all of these pleas for help, you know, 200 a month, are, as you know now, read by this gentleman right here. And I've talked to Clement, and many of these pleas, as you can imagine, are quite heartbreaking. So, you know, the General Service Office does put out regular pleas for help to the fellowship. Examples include articles in Box 459, and then in, most recently in the January edition of the Grapevine, there was a great article that was called Mail Call, M-A-L-E, needing more male volunteers, Mail Call. And there was another article in the this year's prison edition of the Grapevine. This year it was the June edition of the Grapevine. So, you know, there are pleas for help. The Corrections Correspondent Service needs more more correspondents, particularly men. The General Service Office puts out a letter to delegates twice a year asking them to share this information with their area. And the other thing that we try to do is make presentations at other AA events, increase the awareness of the service at meetings, you know, the meetings we go to. And I've done most of that stuff. You know, when I figured out this form of service is rarely mentioned, I began to mention it. So, you know, I've pitched up my home group. I make presentations at other meetings I go to, made a presentations at my local General Service District, our local intergroup district, our local corrections committee. And I certainly encourage my sponsees to take a look at Corrections Correspondent Service. And just for what it's worth, you know, I developed a little talk sheet that includes some of the pertinent points about this service that I've got available. You can look at it after the meeting if you would like to. And, you know, if you're in the audience wondering right now how you can help, you know, if you think you are willing and you think you're available to write on average one letter a month to a suffering inmate, please enroll. There are application forms up here. And if you are experienced with this service, please talk it up, you know, in your local fellowships, because we do need the help. So in closing, let's make sure the hand of AA is available when that inmate needs it. Thank you so much.
Wow. Patrick and I didn't really give a formal introduction, but everybody that's sitting at this table has done something in corrections correspondence that, you know, really made them stand out. And when it came to increasing the awareness of the service and just being involved and being a cheerleader, basically, for the service, it's hard to outdo any of these gentlemen sitting here. So once again, let's give Patrick another round of applause. And with that, I'm going to introduce Philip.
Good morning. My name is Philip, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February the 18th, 2006. I was just starting middle age. I'm now getting deeper into middle age. So here I am. My home group is the Soothe Thursday night 12 and 12 meeting at Calvary Lutheran Church in Louisville, Kentucky. My service sponsor is present this morning. I have a sponsee that's present this morning. This morning I observed the first step. I accepted my alcoholism. I did my third step this morning. I've done the seventh step this morning. And I've done the 11th step this morning. And I've asked God to please take away these nerves. I'm waiting. So I can probably sit down now because Patrick just did marvelously. I'm new to service. I'm about 2 years into correction service. And that was, I wasn't going to tell you all that at all, but it just came out. Thank you, Lord, I guess. But it is one was to say it's rewarding is an understatement. And I have found in this program, in dealing with this, the paradox of AA and this service work, the paradox. There's so many paradoxes that I find. You have, in order to keep it, you have to give it away. The third step is at the top of the arch, not the bottom of the arch, but that's our cornerstone. When I pray for others, I feel better. Those kinds of things, those paradoxes keep flying up to me all the time as I do this in service. Actually dealing with the service itself, I got acquainted with writing to inmates when I was, I had a sponsee in the jail at Louisville, and he had a cellmate, and I would go down to visit my sponsee, and this cellmate said, "Do you think your sponsor would even talk to me?" And I consented to do that. And I wound up working the steps with this other sponsee. It took us 2 years to do it. We worked all by mail. I did go down to the Green River Correctional Facility in Central City, Kentucky, to hear his fifth step. I made two trips down there to hear his step. And this was before I ever heard of the correspondence service. I did that. And when I came to the committee, or when I came to as a GSR, in my district meeting, they needed someone to work with corrections. And that was my first time to be of service. And I had volunteered because I had had this action with my sponsee. And then that led to this. And what I could do to be of service. And that's what I did. And it has been, as I said, to be rewarding is absolutely is an understatement. To best let you know what goes on, let me share with you a letter that I got from a young man. Let's call him John. I'm not going to read the letter. I'm going to read just his introduction to me. He says, "I'm incarcerated for becoming combative with an officer after a DWI traffic stop. After being tased, I kicked the officer. He pulled his gun on me, and not wanting to get shot, I grabbed his wrist, and the gun then discharged between us. I was initially arrested for attempted murder of a police officer. 30 seconds, drunk, cost me 10 years of my life. The loss of my wife and three amazing children and the opportunity to be a father to my children. I lost my father to a house fire, was one. Go figure, he was drunk. How my children lose their father, same consequences. That sponsor and I have had now probably 15 letters between us, and we're working the steps. He's on the fourth step. And we started out just writing. You don't have to do the steps with these people. But I have found that when I'm communicating with a person that I can't see, I have to rely more on God to be sure than to direct my actions, and they become evident to what that person is going to receive. It's much easier to sit with someone face to face, and if you make a blunder, you can say, oh, no, don't do that. But when you're writing that letter, my reliance on God is greater than anything at this, any other time in sobriety. So that rewarding is there. And as Patrick said, when I get those letters in the mail, and I currently have two sponsees that I'm working the steps with, both of them, one's a second stepper, one's a fourth stepper. I'm a second and fourth stepper when I need to be. That's what the program has done for me in writing. I work with the corrections committee in my district, and we try to carry the message via the pink cans in our area meetings. Our district has about 30 meetings in it, and we strive to get the pink cans in those meetings and we announce in our meetings about the correspondence service. And I have found in doing that, I get a better result if I approach individually. Because one alcoholic can explain to another. When I ask an alcoholic, how would you like to be of service to someone who really needs some service? A lot of people don't like to speak. So if you're shy, what better way to express your recovery than writing? To have recovery. So I have much better experience getting that way from men. I was going to say something profound about right now. Patrick, it was wonderful. But I do, it's really funny that we were talking. We weren't talking. I was, I'm a musician. And I have been for 69 years. Yeah. But I can't type. I can play Beethoven, Bach, all these intricate things, but I can't type. I never took typing. So as a result, when I got this sponsees, we started working steps, I discovered this wonderful program called Dragon. Oh, it's wonderful. I can whip out a 4-page letter in 20 minutes. Yeah, it's absolutely fabulous, and they can read my writing. That in itself is thank you, Lord, you know. I was thinking about talking with, I almost said his name, but John, and I was sharing with him about what I do daily and what I want to be. And actually what I want to be is nothing. We start out in life, I started out, there's a thing that I purchased at a Indian gift shop in Washington State many years ago. And that sign says, I started out with nothing, and I still have most of it. I have that hanging in my kitchen. I bought that while I was drunk after a real nice lunch on the reservation. Left all the way home to Kentucky from Washington. Oh, yeah. Started with nothing, and I still have most of it. Well, I didn't realize how prophetic that had come to be, because I didn't start. That was in 2002, after my wife had died, that I bought that. I was on a geographical feel sorry for myself cure, and come home. But now I look at that every day, and I realize that's what I'm striving for now. Is nothing. And how prophetic that was. And anymore, I don't, when I pray, and I, what I'm telling you is what I tell my, these people that I communicate with. I can't cover the history thing nearly as well as Patrick did. But I can tell you what I do with this program. What I tell this person is what I do in the program and go along. I talk about the traditions, 5, 6, 11, and 12. Be sure that those are properly attended to. I acquaint myself with those and working with those areas. But achieving nothing, that is, I don't ask God to give me things anymore. I don't say, God, give me this. God, give me that. I ask God to take away, subtract, take away. And all that, if you turn attention to our prayers, the third step prayer, relieve me of the bondage of self. The seventh step, you know, all of me, good and bad, ask you really everything, you know, all my defects of character. So every prayer I'm learning in this thing is, God, don't give me anything. Grant me sobriety, but please take all this stuff. Don't grant me honesty. Take away my dishonesty. And these things, the way I approach those things. And that's what I share with those men that I now say they're our sponsor. But they write letters back. And the last one I got back was an 8-page letter. This is the second stepper. How would you like to have to tell somebody else how you achieved your belief in a power greater than yourself? And make them believe it, or make it. Can you do that? Can you convince someone to do that? That's when God comes in. That's when God comes in. So there is spirituality in mail. There is spirituality in working this program, and how unselfish it has caused me. No, it has caused me to realize how selfish I am, and in 20 minutes I can make somebody's life better. I can make their life better. And don't think there isn't alcohol and drugs in prisons. It is there. So they're not there just by, you know, just solely because they're incarcerated. I mean, not free from drugs and alcohol. So it's there. I was telling you about nothing, and I was talking to the man with whom I'm rooming yesterday. It was so ironic, this thing about nothing, that it's really become kind of my theme for right now. But yesterday morning, on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, it says, "What do you get from the man who has nothing?" That's the Dalai Lama. About how appropriate that we, through correspondence, I'm able to get rid of some of the things God's giving me. God's making me honest. God's making me trustworthy. God's making me responsible. Things I never was before. And I want to thank Clement, and I want to thank the GSO for giving me this opportunity to share my sobriety with you. And I want to thank all of you for coming naked and for me breathing real slow. Thank you. My name is Philip, and I'm an alcoholic.
All right, Philip, thank you. Great job. It's not a week that goes by that I don't get emails from Philip. And there will be three or four names he'll have in columns, and he's not a great typist, so the columns are kind of a jar there, but he sends that, I mean, regularly. I mean, I wouldn't even attempt to count how many people he has personally registered in corrections correspondence and got them linked you know, at the office. I mean, and then that's a big thing. That's a big thing. And I won't attempt to interpret what he said. It was powerful. And with that, I'm going to give you somebody who's been involved in corrections at every level of the general service structure. And maybe Ken will be kind enough to share some of that perspective with you. And with no further ado, Ken.
Ken, alcoholic. After that tidbit of introduction, I'm glad that I can tack alcoholic onto what Clement said about me. That's kind of intimidating. Oh, by the way, I'm glad that it was pointed out to me that you're all naked, because I hadn't caught that. What I had noticed was that the eye contact and the body language in here seem more intense than in some of the sessions I've been in. It's probably because it's a group of people who actually consciously selected a topic and hunted all the way to the very end of the building. You selected to be here. And I couldn't help but notice that. I didn't notice the more personal issues in play. But I will admit, as a total aside, that I was playing around with why I was selected for this topic. I mean, there's a Clement addressed part of it. That's the one thing I happen to know something about is corrections work. But the ego went roaming through, why not something more spiritually, something to do with the 11th step, for instance. And yeah, exactly, and that's why I wasn't selected. there's no problem there. And then I played around with the thought that Al-Anon alone has six sections on sex. And again, it's something I don't know anything about, so it was clear that... In fact, it occurred to me that had I been asked to speak on that one, the only real advice I would have would be a very short talk, because I would say where sex with alcoholics is concerned, just don't do it. And life will be so much simpler. At 6 months sober, my sponsor handed me a piece of paper, and he said, fill it out. I said, what is it? I've learned since, don't ask questions, just do it. He said, you're going to prison. Now, I'd actually had two judges tell me that I was on a path to that already. I had a couple of misdemeanors in one area and a couple of misdemeanors in another area. And the one thing the judges all seemed to agree on about me was I was on a path. So when my sponsor said that, I just went, oh. And I filled out he never said, you're going to participate in with a group of us who are going in. We're going to be there for a specified period of time. We'll be escorted in and we'll be escorted out again. He didn't clarify any of that. He said, you're going to prison. And I had such a raw desire not to drink that I didn't even question it. And I just said, okay. And that was my first exposure to the Nebraska State Penitentiary. And that was in April of 1983. As I said, I was sober 6 months at that point. And I have been a regular supporter of the Iron Bar Group at State Penitentiary in Lincoln since then. And I'm a regular participant in another prison in Nebraska every other Monday, and a regular participant in one of the local jails every other Wednesday. That's just become the thing I do. And so when it comes to, well, corrections correspondence, I think, is just a subset of corrections work, which is just a subset of 12-step work. So it's just the niche in 12-step work that I've fallen into. And the sponsor who got me involved in that was really hard-nosed. The first time he was convicted and served a year was at the age of 8. And so he had an understanding of life and incarceration that very few of us could have, and I'm fortunately, lived the corrections experience or the incarceration experience through him without experiencing it myself, except for silly little county jail time, and obviously that doesn't count. That's just a qualification for sobriety, I suppose. Oh, I forgot to mention, my home group is appropriately the Outlaws group. We meet on Tuesdays in Omaha, Nebraska. All welcome to drop by. Anyway, my experience in corrections was, of course, in depth and taught to me by people who knew the ropes, not just as those of us who are well-intentioned and somewhat naive in the ways of prison life, but by my sponsor and then another guy he sponsored that he'd actually gotten to know in the state penitentiary in the 50s. They dated back that far, but finally they're both on the streets, and the one was now sponsoring the other, so I had my sponsor and his sponsee and myself, and I learned through them what prison life is like and how to conduct myself as a person living on the streets and carrying in a message. That's my background as a grunt, if you will, which is what I've the way I view myself as a corrections worker. And as Clement pointed out, I served as a delegate to the General Service Conference, and when one is selected to that position, one goes, oh my, I'm certainly not qualified for that. And then I got a letter telling me I was placed on the Conference Corrections Committee. And I went, oh, okay, I could do that. I understand the literature. I understand the issues. I know the dynamics. And there was at least one other guy on the committee with me and who really knew, because he, again, had served time much the way my sponsor had. And so I felt I was actually a valuable member of the General Service Conference just because I really knew what that committee was all about and what we were doing. We were working on the pamphlet. Sherbeet sitting behind what's the title of it?
Sherbeet sitting in a cell.
Yeah, that one. I really did read it. It hadn't occurred to me I was going to mention it, and it fell out of my head. But yes, and that kind of thing where I actually knew people who read these things and got perspectives from the people inside. And then a few years ago, I got a phone call from a very good friend who was then our delegate, who informed me that I'd been pulled out of the hat and I was to serve as the West Central Regional Trustee. And I wasn't just overwhelmed. My knees actually buckled. It's cliche, but in this case, it really did happen. I had to sit down because I was going down anyway. And so committee work. I spent 2 years while serving as a trustee on the Trustees Committee on Corrections. Again, I knew the job. The rest of it notwithstanding, it's all a learning process, I was able to walk into that component of my responsibility fully comfortable and knowledgeable in what goes on in corrections and what kinds of things are needed and just what it's all about. So, yes, I've been useful, and I've known that I've been useful, which is really good for me, and I suspect for the greater cause of carrying the message of recovery. Now, a lot of what I was thinking as I put my thoughts together dovetails so clearly with what's already been covered that if you see, sir, or hear some redundancy, it's not because we colluded. It's just because it's kind of a narrow topic, and our experiences are very much similar, or related at least. Unlike those of us who do actually go into correctional facilities, most people don't really think in terms of alcoholics who are incarcerated. I know that from my own home group, except for one man who actually did serve some significant time, and he doesn't say much about it, but I heard him sort of let it slip once that he'd been in prison. Most people are just sort of indifferent to inmates. We don't think about it. It's sort of out of sight, out of mind. I suppose that would be true of me, too, even though two judges had tried to sort of scare me into shaping up. You know what? How effective that is. From their perspective, that's all they knew. Threaten and see if things get better. I had no identification or thoughts for people who were incarcerated, and that's just the way it is for most of us. In fact, it occurred to me, these pamphlets that Clement makes so available, we probably should make them less available. We should probably make them harder to get so that there'd become sort of a demand for them and people would come searching for them instead of seeing them sitting on a table or on a display and going, oh, yeah, another pamphlet, and move on. By the same token, the notion that we're constantly putting out the message, we need men to correspond, we need men to correspond, it might be more effective if we said, we need a couple really good, interested, dedicated people, and the rest of you all just kind of back off. I know what my alcoholic personality would, how I'd respond. I am one of those. Okay. Likewise, it's really easy and probably comfortable for us all to think, as was pointed out, the guys who are incarcerated have meetings to go to. They have AA accessible to them. That's covered. It's done. Not by me necessarily, but I know it's being done. There's a corrections committee. There are people I know who go into jails. It's taken care of. It really isn't at all that simple. The jail I go into, county jail in Omaha, there's only the guys are housed in mods. And there may be like 15 or 20 in a mod. Of the 10 or so mods in the jail, only one gets to go to AA meetings. They've self-selected to be in programs. So they have religious training. They have Narcotics Anonymous. They have Alcoholics Anonymous. They have access because they've sort of self-selected to track for mental health, emotional health, to address problems in general, be it alcoholism or, you know, whatever their personal issue is, they've self-selected. And they get us. They get access to us. The rest of the population doesn't. So to say there are meetings in that jail, well, absolutely true. Useful to most inmates? No. Now, it doesn't mean that everybody who's in there is an alcoholic, but you know, the percentages aren't bad at all. The percentages are much higher than they actually realize, and we know that, but that's not our job. We simply communicate a message and see how people respond. And the other thing, and I don't know exactly what our practice is on this, but it occurs to me that we probably need to do a better job of communicating the availability of this to inmates. I was speaking in our local prison just a week or so ago. I was actually telling them about, I started by talking about June 10th, 1935 and its significance because this meeting was just soon after that. And then that I was coming to this thing to celebrate that 80 years of AA. And I mentioned that I would be here doing this. And then I said the next logical thing, which I had never said before, that there is a correspondence service, and any of you who would like to write personally to someone, it's available. It had never occurred to me for those words to come out of my mouth before, and I have no idea exactly how all of these letters flood into you, but I'm willing to bet there are a whole lot of guys out there and gals who have no idea that this is actually available, except perhaps word of mouth from other people who've corresponded. I've encountered some of that over the years, of course. One guy will say that I heard this from someone. But until the ball gets rolling, I really don't know how that's initiated. And what I was thinking about was in the context of we just assume that people have access. Within my own experience, there are four facilities or four situations came to mind. I'd like to share them with you because as I reflected on each, I thought, dang, The first is the maximum security prison in Nebraska. Yes, even Nebraska has a maximum security prison. There are some very bad people everywhere. But in that maximum, to that maximum security prison and from that maximum security prison, I've known several guys to flow through the system as they're placed wherever they're placed. And this particular prison is in a more remote part of the state where there isn't really a population to support it with meetings. And in fact, it's been a contentious sort of environment within the prison, and meetings have been sparse and sporadic. I've been in the facility twice personally only, and it's been open, a decade or more, maybe a couple decades by now. I've lost track. Just two trips in there. And it's an intimidating place. It looks like the name sounds, right? Just a month ago, there was a riot. A couple inmates were killed. Nobody is going to get to visit inside that prison for a whole long time. And the only communication anybody, and there are several AA guys in there. There are several who are members of AA as well as those who are, perhaps just thinking about the possibility of hope. They will have no contact from us for a long time. The doors have been shut. Anytime it hits the news big time, everything stops. Likewise, about 25 years ago, the AA community had such a good relationship with the penitentiary system in Lincoln, which is a place I have supported all this time, that they actually allowed us to take inmates from inside the prison to a local roundup. That's a compliment to AA that is just par excellence. However, the guys knew ahead of time that they'd be going to this roundup. One guy went in the back door with AA escort, went out the front door with his girlfriend, and left the country for a year. That, too, made the news. It read in our local paper something like inmate escapes from AA activity. It was as bad as it could have been. And so, naturally, the institution, its job is to keep as low a profile with the public as possible anyway. And, to tie us directly to the escape, for a while there was obviously nobody going out, but there were no meetings for quite a while. And finally it was good interaction with the warden, and we'd had excellent credibility up to that point. They did let us back in, so we were allowed to resume meetings, but of course nothing like that visitation thing has ever occurred again, nor would I expect it to. Part of my service as trustee, I got to travel around the country, and I was in Wyoming. If you don't live in the Midwest, you probably only know Wyoming because of Yellowstone National Park. It's got mountains, it's got high plains, and that's it. There's really no population base whatsoever. I overheard a conversation in their corrections committee about taking meetings into one of the prisons, and I was intrigued because of the flow of the conversation. It had to do with taking days off work, using vacation days, subsidizing people's housing overnight. Now, that got my attention because of all the facilities I support, none is more than, even the Tecumseh prison that had the riot is only a couple hours' drive for me. But, they told me to stretch it out. She said, my wife is always my timekeeper. Thanks, son. Anyway, the conversation was, how do we carry this our message when driving time and distance and everything is almost an impossibility? And I was just intrigued. I've been so spoiled by easy, ready access. And I appreciated the guys in the Wyoming facility certainly could use more contact. One that really hit me, 3 years ago, I was in Barbados. Barbados celebrated its 50th anniversary, and as part of the anniversary, it was much like this, where a lot of non-alcoholics were invited, including the local head of the corrections operation. It would have been their national corrections facility in the small island country. 50 years of Alcoholics Anonymous in Barbados, they had no corrections work whatsoever. And I was asked to make a few comments from the podium because the professionals were in the audience. And it occurred to me, well, I chatted with guys afterwards, but it occurred to me that they don't even correspond, let alone have meetings carried into them. The guys who were alcoholics in that facility for 50 years have never had any interaction with AA until they hit the streets. We have work to do. Anyway, I was reflecting on this whole thing, and it occurred to me again, there's really only one reason to correspond. It's our 12th step. We just do that. And there should never be any discussion. We should just be doing it, and the needs should be met and all that. So, time flow?
You're good.
Okay. I started thinking about what are the reasons why people don't correspond? And I started to put together a list of reasons why people don't correspond. And what I came up with was my 10 top reasons why people don't correspond. I'd like to share those with you and make a couple of commentaries, sort of a la David Letterman back when he was funny, if you remember that. Number 10, I was never in prison and can't relate to inmates. The good news is, the good news is, we do not need to relate to inmates. It's not our job. They do not need any advice on how to live as inmates. They know how to function very well within a facility. What they're dying to know and really afraid like crazy to ask is, how do I live in a way that I don't have to return to being an inmate once I hit the streets? What's the shortest path to living on the outside and continuing to stay on the outside? That's all they want to hear from us. And by the way, conversations with inmates can get interesting because it's sort of the nature of being incarcerated to try to game anything. It's not conscious, it's not mean-spirited, it's just the nature of the environment. So it's our job in any correspondence to focus on just what we know how to do, which is live soberly. Number 9 is just the flip. I was in prison and don't want anything to do with correctional facilities. I've heard that one. I don't blame guys. But the simple reality is people who have been incarcerated have I learned this from my sponsor and from my sponsee, my fellow sponsee. As much as they really don't want anything to do with correctional facilities, they know that they're the only ones who can carry the message with credibility and relatability, identification, if you will, that it is possible to live a life as a criminal, become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and live soberly from then on. So for communication from those guys is far more powerful than communication from me, because mine is ultimately theory, whereas other people have solid evidence from their own lives. Number 8, I don't want to jeopardize my family by giving my home address. You addressed that one. I heard this once stated very simply as, but I have daughters at home. And I'm glad that was that point was addressed. Find another mailing address. We don't have to use our home address if, in fact, there is any question or concern about the safety of our family. Whether it's sharing a P.O. box with another member of your home group or using one in existence or using an intergroup. There are so many ways. Don't have to use home address. Number 7, I'm waiting for the new corrections correspondence piece, engaging AA members in corrections work. If you're a service junkie, as I am, you know that there's a service piece that's just been developed on that topic. It's a good one. I've read it. It's nice. On the other hand, it really has nothing that it contains nothing that hasn't already been said elsewhere. So I assure you it's not essential to read that piece before proceeding, but you may want to talk to Clement. He'll fix you up with one later. I don't remember or never learned how to write letters. I didn't mean that to be silly. I know it sounds silly, but people don't write letters anymore. Nobody writes letters. It's a lost art, kind of like long-distance phone calls. It doesn't exist anymore. Well, everybody knows how to communicate one way or another. The trick is not to use silly little U's and R's or WTFs or any of that sort of thing, and just speak from the heart. It's kind of like writing a fourth step. You just write honestly as best you can, and people will accept communication at face value. I don't know how to write to a stranger because I don't have anything to say. Everyone who's corresponded has hit that wall and gone, what do I say? Well, actually, my approach is I pretend I'm addressing any topic at any discussion meeting, and we always focus our comments on the new guys in the room anyway. So corresponding with inmates is really no different from talking at any AA meeting. We simply speak on target, on topic, on the message. And as long as we don't deviate, it works just fine. Number four, I was never good at English, or whatever the native language might be. Now, I am one person in the room who understands the pain of someone saying, someone being conscious about his writing because I'm a retired English teacher. I have made more people write more things that they didn't want to write. critique them and then made them rewrite them. I think probably more than anyone else in this room, or at least I'm in good competition here. So I understand. Again, grammar, spelling, punctuation. You do the best you can. You communicate honestly. Anything else is ego. Now, I actually have a worse problem than some of you. Not that my ego is any worse, but my knowledge of how things should be written to be correct is greater than most people's. And so my self-critiquing is maddening. I don't write anything that has a spelling error or a punctuation error or a grammar error or any other kind of error. I beat myself up on stuff that I know is irrelevant, but I can't let go of it. So if you'll just accept that it's a universal problem, that awkwardness about communication, it really isn't that difficult. It's the language of the heart. It's our staying on message. I don't have time to correspond. I wrote that, and then I thought, I can't even look myself in the mirror and write that one. Because that's the classic rationalization. There's always time if we care to do it. Which goes very nicely with, I don't want to correspond. Which is about as honest as you can get, actually. I just don't want to do it. And I thought, true, honest, definitely honest. Just go talk to your sponsor. That's how I got into prison. It had nothing to do with what I wanted or our universal experiences. It's not what we want. It's what we need to do. And if that was my clock, that's perfect, because the last point I have here, the number one reason, is a very narrow one. And it just fits a very few of us who are fans of an HBO series. And we know that there are just emergency items on the horizon because winter is coming. And if you're well aware that winter is coming, you also know that it's going to last for years, and then there'll be all kinds of time to write because there won't be anything else we can do. I thank you so much for allowing me to participate.